is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Pat Baldwin, head men's basketball coach at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years, and now with its integrated web platform, coaches have the ability to add video to plays and share them directly to their players' Android and iPhones via their mobile app. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. In addition to a great product, they also provide basketball coaching content and resources through their blog and PlayBank. For access to these plays and more information, visit fastmodelsports.com or follow them on Twitter at fastmodel. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. We are tipping off tonight, Jay, after opening night in the NBA. Two, I would say, lackluster games in terms of being competitive, but some interesting developments within these two games for sure.
Yeah, I would say, listen, I'll be honest with you. I watched the first like 10 minutes of the Nets Warriors game and I turned it off and was like, well, that game's over. I mean, Kyrie and Durant, that's the kind of the monster that we all envisioned. Now, once again, this is going to be a test in chemistry and being able to put up with one another and things like that. But they have the potential to be great together. I mean, they have potential. And
that team offensively can win an NBA title. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Yeah, for sure. I agree completely. I mean, they just looked – it honestly looked like Kevin Durant – hadn't missed a step, to be honest with you.
I agree. Durant looked fantastic. I mean, he looked absolutely fantastic.
And Kyrie, I was wondering if he was burning sage before the game or not, but whatever, you know, probably not because it was a home game, so I'm guessing he didn't do that. But maybe he's going to do that every home game too to get rid of the evil spirits or whatever he thinks is in the building. So yeah, congrats to the Nets. But once again, I think we have to also highlight the fact that the Warriors are an undermanned team to try and match up against that team. I mean, Draymond missed a lot of training camp, so he didn't look good, and Steph didn't look good, and Pascal, that poor guy.
Draymond didn't even play.
He was there though, right?
Yeah, he was there, but he didn't play.
All right, well,
so that's why he didn't look good.
Well,
he didn't really contribute much.
He yelled on the bench, man. But listen, all I know is I watched the first five minutes, and
Steve Nash had a great game plan for Draymond. Shut him down.
Well, there you go. I told you I watched the first 5 minutes and I turned it off. I knew it was over.
All right, well, there you go. Fair enough. Well, I didn't see any of the first half and watched most of the second half, so I missed Kyrie.
I mean, it was 30 points. It was a 30-point game.
Because I just wanted to see more of what Durant looked like, to be honest with you. I mean, that was the real key for me is I just wanted to see. I mean,
did he play much in the second half, though?
Not a whole lot, but he was in. At least I could see him move.
Yeah.
And I saw
some highlights. Moving better than you move, Mike?
He was definitely moving better than I move at this point. No question about that.
Listen,
I think your call that he looked pretty much the same as Durant of old was right on point. And the thing with the Nets, and I said it a minute ago, I just think offensively, when you look at the kind of weapons that they can throw out there and the shooting and just the variety of different types of lineups and the number of guys that they have that can create offense and – clearly, they can create offense at different levels. You have Durant and Kyrie who are at an extreme elite level. But then you have LeVert and you've got Dinwiddie, who are two guys who, yeah, maybe they're not the number one option on an NBA championship team, but on this team, they can be options number three and four, creating for other people, and they're going to be super effective. I just think this team's going to be really hard to guard. I think the question will become, what do they look like defensively against the best teams? And that's the question that we won't be able to answer until the playoffs. But clearly this team, I think, is going to, if they stay healthy, and that's a caveat with Kyrie. We know, having had him in Cleveland, and just we've seen over the last couple of years since he left Cleveland, his health and his ability to stay on the floor has not been one of his strong suits, let's put it that way. And Durant, despite what he looked like tonight, there's always the risk that something can go wrong with that Achilles, or maybe he just gets another injury. But if those two guys are healthy and they can keep – I mean, they have enough depth that they can withstand an injury to anybody else. If one of those two goes down, then clearly that limits their ceiling. But this team, if those two guys are healthy – this team is going to be right there at the top of the East. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
All right, and do you have anything to take away from the Warriors? I will say Wiseman played pretty well tonight. From what I guess, like I said, I only watched a few minutes, but he looked like he was moving well. He scored.
He got a lot of points in garbage time, but he shot it well. I'm looking at the box score. I thought he hit two threes in a row, but he must have hit a long two. But I thought his jumper looked good. He was only 4 of 8 from the line. He had 19, 6 rebounds. He's athletic. It looks like he's going to be a good player. I think we said it going into the draft that any of those guys at the top of the draft would be lucky to go to Golden State just because of the culture system and Steve Kerr and the system and just being in a winning environment. And so I think that – and clearly Wiseman is a position of need for Golden State, so he's going to play a lot regardless of whether they're good or bad or whatever. I think you saw a lot of the problems that they're going to have tonight is just – it's just so much tougher when – Steph's the only guy out there that really is a creator for anybody else. And so it becomes really difficult. And I don't know that he's built to be that guy game in and game out who's just going to create offense for everybody else. He's just not as big as the typical guy that you think of, whether that's the LeBron, Luka, Kawhi, that mold of player who's going to be able to consistently create offense for his teammates. And really this team, I mean, they have nobody. I mean, you look at their bench, there's nobody on their bench at all that can create for anyone. And obviously,
we know. Do you know who looked terrible, Mike?
Who's that?
Wiggins.
Yeah, Wiggins is 4 of 16. And look, Wiggins at this point, I think you have to just forget about the fact that Wiggins was the number one overall pick. Clearly, if you view him through that lens, I mean, the guy's a huge disappointment. He's a huge disappointment, too.
He's better than Anthony Bennett, though.
Yeah, he is better than Anthony Bennett, although you could find a lot of guys up and down NBA rosters that are better than Anthony Bennett. Wiggins, I think if you just looked at him as he's a journeyman swingman, he's fine. And he's going to have games where he shoots 4 of 16. He's going to have other games where he goes for 30. It's just the kind of player he is. He's not a guy who makes anybody around him better.
I think my favorite take was Simmons. I don't know if you got all the way through the over-under podcast was, you know, by the end of Andrew Wiggins' career, he very well could end up with 20,000 points, and we're going to look at it and be like, how the hell does Andrew Wiggins have 20,000 points?
Because it's true. The guy's probably averaged, I don't know what his career average has got to be 22, 23 points a game, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's been right in that range every year.
Yeah, I'm guessing. Yeah, you're probably right. So you think here? I'm looking it up real quick. Crack stat.
Okay.
His career is 19.7 points per game.
All right. So I mean, you know, you think about that in terms of the NBA. There's not many guys, if you go over the history of the league, that average 20 points or almost 20 points a game for their entire career. There just aren't very many of them compared to the number of guys that have been in the league. So, yeah, I don't know if he'll get to 20,000 points, but if he has a long career and he sticks around.
Well, he's almost at 9,000, Mike.
Look, he could do it for sure. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. The guy, the one thing that he does do is take a lot of shots, and he's proven over the course of his career that he can score. He's just not a guy who makes anybody else better, and he's not a guy who creates for others. And on this team, I just don't know, beyond Steph, what do you do? I mean, Pascal, decent player, but not a playmaker. Wiggins, we know, is not a playmaker. Kelly Oubre, I like him. He's athletic. He can do some things, but he's not creating for other people off the dribble. Wiseman's a rookie. like I said, their bench, Brad Wanamaker. Are you counting on Wanamaker to generate and be your playmaker on your second team? Good luck with that. I just don't see how this team stays afloat. And I know both of us, I believe, had them outside of the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. I know we had them at the very back end. After seeing them tonight, I guess I'm more convinced that they're going to have a really hard time making the playoffs. I think it's going to be really, really tough on this team to be. Steph's going to have to be unbelievable, and they're going to have to win. They're going to have to win all the games that they're supposed to win in order to even have a chance at sniffing the playoffs, because I don't think this team can compete with the upper echelon teams in either conference.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Whereas Brooklyn is just loaded with playmakers. I mean, Brooklyn,
yes, for sure,
is just, I mean, it's ridiculous what they can throw out there on the floor. And they have lots of nice role pieces. You look at some of the guys that barely play. I forget how to say that French guy's name, Luau Cabarrot, but that guy can play and he can shoot it. Shamet played 20 minutes tonight. I mean, we know he can shoot. He played well in the playoffs 2 years ago. I just think they have a lot of guys that can do things. Uncle Jeff Green played 17 minutes tonight, and we know what Jeff Green can do. Again, when you don't need to count on him, Jeff Green's a nice guy to have on your roster, because he comes in, and you know, we had him here in Cleveland. He basically won, along with LeBron, that Game 7 against the Celtics with a huge performance. So he can be somebody that can impact your team in a positive way if you're not depending on him as your sixth best player, your fifth best player. If he's guy 8 or guy 9 and you can bring him in, man, the Nets are loaded. I mean, they really are. And if they don't get hurt, I expect them to be a top 1 or 2 seed.
Well, listen,
for sure, just like we talked about.
It's good news for your fantasy team, Mike. It's good news for your fantasy team, Kyrie Irving. That's what you're going
to
do.
I swore to my kids I wasn't going to talk about my fantasy team. I didn't want to become – I don't want this podcast to become talking about our fantasy team. So
– Man, all right then, I'll leave it at that.
No, listen, I guess we could quickly just say we put together a Hoopheads Pod Network fantasy league with some of our NBA and coaching podcast brethren, and we did our draft the other night, and my two kids, my daughter who's a junior in high school, my son who's a freshman, they were my GMs. They basically drafted the whole team. I jumped into the draft. I was with my younger daughter coaching her game, and by the time I got home, I think we were on about pick 7 or 8 maybe. So I had a little bit of input there. But even then, I was overruled. The one draft pick I did make was Blake Griffin. That's the one I take credit for. So,
which one was your daughter's pick?
My daughter wanted Isaac Okoro. So we got two Cavs. We got Sexton and we got Isaac Okoro. So I'm not sure that's good or bad. Although I will say, I kind of looked through the rosters of all the teams because my son was pulling it up and trying to tell me how we were going to do in this first game and who we were playing against. And I kind of like our roster. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. People did not want to hear us talk about our fantasy basketball. I can guarantee that.
I agree. But I took Luka with the number one overall pick. I just want to note that.
You did. Okay. That was a good pick. And if you love fantasy basketball, please check out Thrive Fantasy. And when you go and you sign up with Thrive Fantasy, you will get a credit to your account when you mention the promo code Hooped. So if you love daily fantasy, you can go there and prop up with Thrive Fantasy and check that out.
Okay. All right. So let's move to the second game last night, or tonight, or I guess I could say last night at this
Technically
point.
Technically last night, since it's 1:05 a.m. But yes, tonight, last night.
So the Lakers started slow. It kind of brought back memories of last year in the first game. Then the Lakers came back and were down 2 at half. So it was a good second quarter for the Lakers. Third quarter started off good. And then Paul, Pandemic P came back.
After his pass to the referee, he was getting roasted on Twitter.
Oh, he was getting killed. And then all of a sudden, the light switch turned on in his brain or whatever. And they took over. And listen, If I would have picked a game, who would win this game? I would have picked the Clippers, because the Lakers are just they're gonna kind of be going through the motions. And I know that this is the first game of the season, but listen, the fact that they're playing on opening night and now they have to play their next game on Christmas Day, another huge game against Dallas, like they can only do so much to get up for these games right now. They just got done with the season, like.
I'm cutting them slack, Mike. I'm cutting them slack. They've also got all these new faces. And by the way, Harrell and Schroeder looked so good.
Yeah, those guys are going to be really good for the Lakers.
They both got a double-double, and Schroeder, whatever his name is.
Remember, Schroeder plays the piano.
Two assists from a triple-double in his Laker debut. I mean, that's pretty darn good in my opinion, and I think they're going to be just fine. I'm going to sell all my stock after game one. I just want to be clear here. I was just going to say, listen, the Clippers are the Clippers. They are who they are, okay? We know what we're going to get from them when we get down the line. Ty Lue isn't going to change the world. The team is the team. This is the same team that just paid Luke Kennard $64 million for 4 years. Thank you very much.
And the sad part is that's not even the worst contract on this team.
Morris.
I'm going to bang the Marcus Morris worst contract in the league drum until Marcus Morris hits the game-winning shot in the finals. I'm going to continue to preach that contract sealed their doom, that they are not going to be winning anything. I thought it was interesting they started Batum, and he played 28 minutes, might have been one of the worst players in the league playing for the Hornets. And
he played well tonight.
At least to start. Clippers. He was decent. I mean, he had 6 points, six rebounds.
He had both those threes at the beginning of the game. Like, those were early points. First quarter.
I mean, at one point, he was clearly a serviceable player. At this point, he's just not. I don't know. When I look at the Clippers, it's so hard now not to see them completely melting down against the Nuggets when you watch them play. And to me, I kind of look at this where the Lakers are like the big brother, the Clippers are like the little brother, and they're playing basketball out in the driveway, and the game means everything to the little brother, and the big brother's kind of like, hey, whatever. I'm not even, you know, I'll let you get this victory, because when it comes right down to it, when I decide to flex my muscles, we're going to win this game or I'm going to win this game. And that's the way I kind of look at this. I just don't see in the long term, the Lakers roster is better. AD and LeBron are better than Kawhi and Paul George. And nobody trusts Paul George at this point in the playoffs to come through big. Kawhi struggled last year at the end of that Denver series. We know what he can do. He's done it before in two different places. So I still think you can count on Kawhi when the chips are down, even though he had a bad game or a bad finish to that series against Denver last year. But this team, I just look at what, I don't know. Like, are you really counting on, again, we know what Lou Williams is in the playoffs. Is Luke Kennard going to make a huge difference? Now, I think Kennard's probably going to be better than maybe what people think he is. Because a lot of times, again, you're in a losing environment in Detroit. You're in a place where how many Luke Kennard minutes have you watched of him actually playing NBA basketball? I mean, speaking for myself, I mean, maybe I've seen a quarter of Luke Kennard. So for me to pass judgment on what kind of player this guy is going to be for the Clippers in high leverage moments, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he rises to the occasion because he's in a better environment with a winning team. So who knows? It's probably still an overpay. It's probably still a reach, but I'm not going to pass judgment on what Kennard can or can't be at this point.
Mike, I want to ask an honest question for you.
Sure, go for it.
Before watching him play tonight, if I would have put him up with three other white guys, would you have known who he is?
Yes, I would. Only because you know he went to high school in Ohio, right?
Yes, but I wouldn't have known who he was.
So I only know because when he was in high school, I remember somehow, some way, I came across on the internet a dunk that he had coming down the lane in high school. And I just remember he took off from probably like the dotted line in this high school game. And it was a pretty crazy dunk for a white kid from Ohio. And from that point on, I don't want to say I followed Luke Kennard, but I was aware of Luke Kennard. So when he was at Duke, I knew what he looked like. And when he went to the Pistons, I kind of followed and paid attention to what he was doing. Again, I probably only watched I've maybe seen 12 minutes of Luke Kennard basketball probably when he was playing against the Cavs at some point. But I definitely would have recognized him if you put him up with three white guys.
You're a better
sure.
person than me, Mike. Because I would not.
All right, well, good.
All right,
although I'm looking at some of the rosters here. I'm just looking at the Clippers, and I see A. Coffey. I have no idea who that is. I see
it's from
T. Man.
He's from the School of Starbucks.
All right, T-Man, I have no idea who that is. M. Kabangeli, I have no idea who that is. So there's three guys from the Clippers roster that I mean, you could tell me whoever, and I would have no idea who they are. So let's see about the Lakers roster. I believe I know everybody on the Lakers roster. Yeah, I got everybody on the Lakers roster. So
sweet. All right. So speaking of the Lakers, I mean, I don't really take much away from this game for the Lakers. I take that their two new supporting cast members played pretty well. I think they're going to be fine. I'm not worried about them. LeBron didn't play a great game. He played all right. Anthony Davis didn't look great either. I mean, he had moments or he looked okay, but you know, I'm not going to bash them today. It's game one. Now, if they come out on Christmas Day and they lay an egg, and then they, you know, continue to not look as hot, then
it still doesn't matter, though. Come on, it still doesn't matter.
But we can, you know, we can sound an alarm or two.
If they get to the playoffs with Davis and LeBron healthy, they could be an 8 seed and still win it.
All right, I agree.
I mean, ultimately,
100%. I agree.
I think what this also points out again, like, I don't know if you're looking at the box score at all, but the plus minus, LeBron plus 2, Anthony Davis minus 16. And I know plus minus doesn't tell you everything, but I don't know. I've read several articles here in the last week or so touting again the Anthony Davis for MVP. That's going to happen and that LeBron is going to start pushing for Davis to be the MVP and kind of like what that talk was when they first got him last year. And I'm here to tell you again, I've said it before, Anthony Davis is not winning the MVP when LeBron is on his team. He's not.
Can I ask you a question?
Let's kill that. I don't know what the odds are. I don't know what the Vegas odds are for Davis's MVP, but if I could bet against that, I would bet the farm against Anthony Davis ever being the MVP as long as LeBron is on his team.
Can I ask you a question, Mike?
Sure.
LeBron has won 4 MVPs, yes?
Yeah, are you going to ask me how many times he finished second?
Yeah, did you hear him say that?
Yeah, I heard him say that. That's a good question, though. That's a good question. So the answer for those of you out there that are listening is 7.
That's crazy.
It is. It reminds me a little bit of, and I don't know what the numbers are off the top of my head, but Jack Nicklaus is still leading Tiger, right? Tiger has what, 16?
No, Jack Tiger has 15. 15 and 18, I think.
Okay, but Nicklaus has 18 first place finishes, but then the number of seconds that Nicklaus has is like some ridiculous number. The number of times he finished second in a major, I forget what it is, but that's kind of what that stat, when I heard that LeBron had finished second 7 times, the first thing that popped into my head, believe it or not, was Jack Nicklaus and the fact that he is coming second in, again, I don't know what the number is, but a huge number of major golf tournaments over the course of his career. So yeah, we've said it over and over and over again. LeBron's career, his longevity, his ability to play at or near his peak for the number of years that he's been at or near his peak is unprecedented. I mean, he's going into uncharted territory. Kareem.
19, Mike.
19 times he finished second?
Yeah, Jack Nicklaus,
yeah, so,
19.
I mean, that's pretty incredible. So you figure he wins 18 times. He finishes second 19 times. That's pretty incredible.
The next closest person is Phil Mickelson with 11.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not only, again, we all want to recognize wins, and clearly wins are important, and we know what that all entails. But coming in second, especially doing it over the length of your career, just demonstrates another layer of greatness of these guys who can be at or near the top for as long as they are. And Kareem had a really long career. At the end of his career, his statistics definitely started to decline, although he was still an impactful player. I think probably the closest career to LeBron's in reality is Karl Malone, at least in terms of the statistical profile of what they were both doing at an older age. I think Malone was still playing at a very, very high level late into his career. And I know he had a year or two at the very end where he tailed off, but even at the same age LeBron is, 34, 35, Malone was still putting up, I think, mid-20s and close to 10 rebounds a game. So it's just unprecedented what LeBron is doing, what he continues to do. And as long as he can continue to do it and him and Davis stay healthy, I'm not going to worry at all about what goes on in the regular season, because come playoff time, this team's still going to be the favorite, whether they're the 1 seed or whether they're the 8 seed. And you can make a compelling argument that maybe they're not going to finish first, But I think it's going to basically come down to whether or not those two guys stay healthy. If they do, I still expect the Lakers to finish at the top of the Western Conference, even in the regular season, just because, as you said off the top, Schroeder and Montrezl Harrell are both two guys that are going to impact what they do night in and night out. And nice game for the Kuz tonight, coming off his contract extension.
Yeah, listen, he got – yeah, yeah, for sure. Impressive. We'll see what happens. LeBron's been touting him as most improved player of the year, which is hilarious because they had 71 days off, but whatever. And then it's LeBron. He likes to tout other people. And then,
71 days, man. Kuz has been in the gym every day working on his game.
He's been in the lab. That's the way to say it, Mike. He's been in the lab.
Him and Taylor and Horton Tucker, right?
Yeah. Yep, I guess.
He got his 11 minutes tonight, poured in six.
Yeah. He had a basket 7 seconds into his first check-in, Mike.
That's right. Really impressive. He checked, man.
No, he was a layup. It was beautiful. It was a nice little cut to the basket. It was really nice. All right. Anything else in the two games tonight, Mike? Or are we moving on?
I think the big takeaway is Durant looks fantastic. The Nets offensively are going to be incredible as long as they stay healthy. And then Clippers-Lakers, it is what it is. I don't think the result was surprising. And it's a big brother, little brother situation. And until the Clippers get it done in the playoffs on a big stage, the Lakers could care less about these regular season games. Hey, hoopheads. We all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com, spelled A-R-Y-S-E, and use the code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off the future of performance. That's ARYSE.com with promo code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off.
All right, so some news on some contract extensions, and we have to start with the biggest one that happened, I think, the day after we recorded our podcast last week. Giannis staying in Milwaukee. Congrats to the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, I want to be clear here, Mike. I am not going to say that he is going to be playing as a Buck for that whole time he's there, because we see how the NBA is working nowadays. Would I say it's more likely than not that he finishes? Yes, because he seems like he's a rather upstanding person, and I don't think he's going to pull a Harden Anthony Davis. I don't think he's going to force his way out. But is there a world that he won't play out his contract? Yes. But congrats to Milwaukee. I hope that it all works out for them. I would like to see them win a championship at some point. Because like us being small market, it would be nice for Milwaukee to win a championship. And, you know, I don't really have anything else to say on it. I kind of expected Giannis to sign the contract. I'm not always, but the only thing that is, I don't understand why it took so long, why they were being so cryptic. It wasn't like it was a money thing, because it was a max contract extension, so it's going to be the same amount of money, right, Mike? I mean, there was no – I just don't understand what the reasoning was for being so mum on it and kind of being weird about it. That's just my only takeaway.
I don't know. Who knows what's going on behind the scenes? Giannis was in Greece for a while, and so maybe he comes back and just for whatever reason – is still thinking about things, or just is trying to finalize or figure out how they want to announce it, or who knows what the deal is. But I think you said it the best when you talked about it being a small market and the hope for Milwaukee. And when you're a small market team like Cleveland or like Milwaukee, your only hope really to contend for an NBA championship is to draft a superstar. And by superstar, I mean a guy who's going to be a top 3, 4, 5 player in the league. If you draft the 10th best player in the league, great. It's still not going to happen for you. I mean, you literally have to draft a top 5 eventual player in the league. And Giannis clearly fits that bill. And I was so happy when I saw that come across and you sent it to me first. And I just think for the city of Milwaukee, for Giannis, for the league itself, you have to be happy that Giannis is back in Milwaukee, because if he were to leave after this coming season and gone and teamed up with somebody else, it just doesn't have the same feel as somebody building organically. And I know in today's game that that's kind of an old school notion and whatever, but to me, I just would much rather see him compete and try to break down the walls in Milwaukee than see him go and leave and play with somebody else, whoever that somebody else might have been, and win it in another city. If he wins a championship in Miami, or he wins a championship in Dallas, or he goes somewhere else and wins that title, it just doesn't mean nearly as much as it does if he somehow gets it done in Milwaukee. And I think when you start looking at the contract, and you talked about whether or not he finishes that contract in Milwaukee, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, but that extension doesn't kick in, I believe, until next season. So that's a 5-year max. I think the last year is a player option. So really you have this year plus 4 more years where he's on theoretically under team control. So you're
4 more years.
Yeah, so you're looking at 5 years. So I would say at the absolute minimum, he's going to be there for 3.5 years, right? Because he's not going to force his way out with 2.5 years to go on his contract. That's just not going to happen. And I would anticipate, as you said, that based on what he said when he made this announcement, based on what everybody who seems to know him or has reported about him, is that he loves Milwaukee. He's a different kind of guy in terms of his loyalty to his family and the loyalty that he feels towards the Bucks organization. And I guess if something went terribly wrong, maybe he could try to force his way out. But it just seems like he's a guy who's going to continue to stay there, continue to fight, and continue to try to bring a championship to the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, do they have the team that can win the title this year? I don't know. When we talked about it, I think they're still going to be really, really good in the regular season. Do they have enough to win the title? After watching the Nets tonight, there's another team that you're definitely going to throw in their way as a potential obstacle in the Eastern Conference. I think so much of it is going to depend upon Giannis's improvement. I don't know if you read the article, or I don't know if I was listening to one of the various podcasts that I take my time to listen to, where they talked about Giannis, instead of really focusing this offseason on trying to make more threes, that he really was down in the low post trying to work on his post game. And probably makes a lot more sense, because when you think about what could be his go-to move, which has been kind of the thing that has stymied him in the playoffs, that how does Giannis get buckets in isolation when the other teams are keying on him? And he can't really shoot it from the outside. I don't think he's ever going to be a great, great shooter. Now, you'd like him to be able to knock down some catch-and-shoot shots when he's just standing out there and they're backed way off him. But I don't think that's what you want him doing in the last 2 minutes of a game. But if you could put him down in the low block and he could finish down there with a variety of different moves and really improve his footwork, and then the key for him is going to be making free throws, because his free throw percentage has gone down the last few years. I think he was at one point he shot 77% in a season, and then last year he was at 63%, and I think he shot in the 50s in the playoffs. So those are the two things. Can he improve in the post, and can he improve at the foul line? And if he does those two things and Jrue Holiday ends up being the type of player that they think he can be in terms of a fit around Giannis, then they're going to have a chance. I mean, as good as he is, they're going to have a chance to get back and have an opportunity to win an NBA title at some point, you would have to think, during the length of his contract, because it just seems like, I know they're in Milwaukee, but there's got to be other guys who want to play with a guy like Giannis, who to me seems like he'd be a fun guy to play with because he shares the ball and he's just so physical and such a unique player. And it seems like he's a guy that teammates like. So it'll be interesting to follow the length of this contract and see what happens and see if all these predictions that we're all making about him wanting to stay and being happy in Milwaukee, whether that comes to fruition or not.
Yeah, you know, and like I said, I'm happy for them. I'm really happy for them. And we'll have to see what happens with, you know, everything that's going on. And by the way, Mike, we totally did talk about Giannis last week. So we're doing a bang-up job on keeping track of that. Just happening so fast. We're going to blame the short offseason on remembering whether we talked about it or not.
It was fun to talk about it again anyway.
Yeah, so, all right. So in the last week, we've had a bunch of other signings. and contract extension. So we're gonna, I'm gonna say them, and then we can talk about whichever ones we feel we need to talk about. Mike, does that
just
sound good?
Just read them off, and I'll give you a yay or nay on whether or not I
Rudy
thought they
Gobert
were
that's signing a five-year, 205 extension with the Jazz.
That's a nay.
That's a terrible idea.
But okay, let's couch all this by saying that you really have. In a lot of ways, you have two, I guess maybe three options. So option one is you don't sign the guy to an extension. He gets mad. He leaves and you get nothing for him. So that's option one. Option two, you sign him to the extension with the idea that because he's now locked into a contract that's a little bit longer, it makes it easier for another team to trade for him. So that's option number two. And option number three is you sign the guy and then he's a part of your salary cap situation forever the length of that extension is. So look, Rudy Gobert is overpaid. You think about the way the league is trending and you think about where Rudy Gobert fits into what the league looks like
now. I don't see him getting a three-point shot, Mike.
No, I don't see him getting a three-point shot, which again limits his value on the offensive end of the floor is limited. He's clearly a great defensive player. You have to build a certain type of team around Rudy Gobert. You better have a lot of other good offensive players, which Utah, I think, does. Utah's an interesting team. I know we talked about it a little bit, but can Utah take that leap from the middle of the pack in the Western Conference where they're a nice team, but I don't think anybody has felt that the Jazz are a true threat to get to the NBA Finals and win it? Can they get there with the
players? There's only one person
that
believes they can win it, Mike. It's your daughter, Meredith, because she knows that Jordan Clarkson's on the team and he should shoot
That's
the ball
right.
a bunch.
She does love Jordan Clarkson for some reason. I agree. I have no idea. Thank God we didn't draft him in the fantasy draft. Anyway.
He's available. I'm gonna let her know. Availability.
Hey, we were about to propose some trades to you tonight, but I put the kibosh on it. Anyway, I think the key for the Jazz is going to be Donovan Mitchell and where he takes his next step of development. But look, that Gobert contract is going to look bad at the end of it.
Oh,
just simply because
Mike, it doesn't even. And we don't have to wait to the end of it. It looks terrible now, Mike. It's terrible.
But you have to also couch that with the fact that you're probably not getting many free agents who are going to come to Utah. If you don't spend that money on Rudy Gobert, who are you spending it on? And you already have Gobert. You already know what he
is.
You know
what
you have.
And someone made a good point about it being a new ownership group, so they want to show that they're going to spend money. And
right,
so,
which is true. So there's some determining factors that go along with it. But just on the merits of the contract alone, that's a nay. All right, give us the next one.
The next one, Kyle Kuzma, 3-year contract extension with a player option for the third year. It's a $40 million contract. I think it's a good move. And I mean, I think it's a good move. It's a win-win. I think he has room to grow, but he's also going to be doing it with two of the best players in the NBA. So he's a valuable asset, and he's important to the team. So that's what I'm going to say. I think that's a good move.
I think that's a good move. I think it's a good move because to me, that still speaks to Kuzma now becomes more tradable than he was last year, because last year he was on his rookie contract. I think he was making because he was drafted at the back end of the first round, he was making like $2.5 million or something like that. So clearly there's not much that you can trade a $2.5 million contract back to get something that's going to help you. Whereas now at the number where he is with the new contract, he becomes a lot more tradable. There's a lot more maybe veteran pieces or guys that you think you could depend on more than Kuzma that are out there that you might be able to trade at the trade deadline. And if you can't trade him, I think it's a fair contract for a guy who potentially could develop into something a little bit more than what he is now. So, and from Kuzma's standpoint, I don't know that he's been super productive, and he's been in a kind of some weird situations with the Lakers in terms of being with the whole other group when you had Ingram and Lonzo and that whole group there, and then those guys leave, and here comes LeBron, and we all know that LeBron didn't like that particular group of young guys. And so, who knows? I mean, he hasn't really been in an ideal situation, I guess, to flourish as an individual player. So either he continues to develop in his role with the Lakers, or maybe he gets traded and gets an opportunity to go to a team that maybe isn't as good but gives him a bigger role and he's able to develop into a better player, and then his next contract he can cash in. So I think that's a win-win for both the Lakers and for Kuzma at this point.
Yep.
Hey, coaches, parents, and group leaders. I want to introduce you to our newest sponsor, SnapRaise. SnapRaise is the nation's largest digital donation platform built to help teams, youth groups, and clubs raise money quickly and efficiently without selling products. SnapRaise builds your group a customizable campaign website, and students use their mobile devices to connect and engage with their biggest fans. My son's high school team used SnapRaise this season, and our team raised all the money they needed to fund their season, and then some. Getting SnapRaise started is quick and free. Just visit SnapRaise.com, and you'll get connected to a local SnapRaise expert in no time.
The next one is Kennard's 4-year for $64 million, with $56 million guaranteed. Listen, congrats to Luke Kennard. He swindled them. This is a swindling, in my opinion. I don't know. I would have never expected him to be a $16 million a year player, Mike. Okay. Like I said, I wouldn't have been able to pick him out of a lineup. You could have put up six white guys, including yourself, up there, and I would have never known who Luke Kennard was. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Well, that's fair. Like I said, I don't claim to be a Luke Kennard NBA basketball expert, but I do think that when a guy is buried in a wasteland like Detroit has been for the last few years and nobody sees him play and you never play in a meaningful game, it's hard to really judge what you can or can't be in high leverage moments. So although on the surface it looks like an overpay, and chances are Luke Kennard's never going to probably be more than the Clippers' seventh or eighth man, seems like paying $64 million for that is a little bit of a reach. But I'm not going to denigrate Luke Kennard at this point until I see what he does in some big games. Because when you've never played in big games, it's hard to know what your real value is. Is he going to be a guy who shrinks in the moment? Or could he be a guy who has another gear when he's playing in more important games than what he's had an opportunity to so far in his career? So who knows? I would say on the surface, it's a nay, but it could end up actually being – he could end up being a guy that could help them depending on what he looks like in the playoffs.
All right. So then the next one is two Magic extensions. We got a person near and dear to your heart, Markelle Fultz, 3 years, $50 million. And then Jonathan Isaac, 4 years, $80 million. So, you know, they're really paying these young guys. I will say this, though. I don't even think Jonathan Isaac's going to play this year, is he?
Like, no, I don't think so.
So they're giving him that's a little bold, in my opinion, the 4 year $80 million.
$20 million for him not to play this year.
Well, I mean, for extension on top of that. I mean,
he's playing the other 3 years for $27 million a year. That's a name,
no, Mike. That's a 4 year extension on top of this year. He already had a contract this year, Mike. The 4 year extension is on the end of this year.
Okay. All right. Well, so whatever he's making this year, you're throwing that money out the window, lighting it on fire, and then
But you're also paying him, and he's been injury prone.
He's had two season ending injuries, and to his legs, which for a guy who relies on his athleticism as a defender, and that's probably, at this point, probably still his biggest asset is his athleticism and his length. And when you're talking about two season-ending leg injuries, at some point, I don't care how young you are and how athletic you are, that has to compromise some of what makes you special. And so to me, I just would not have put that kind of money into Jonathan Isaac let's put it this way. I would be very, very scared if I was an Orlando Magic front office person or I was an Orlando Magic fan that I'm ever going to see a productive full season out of Jonathan Isaac. The history of big guys having multiple leg injuries and coming back
Seriously, let's think. Let's talk about it. Who do we think? The person I think of automatically is Adrianus Ilgauskas. And that's a foot injury. I know it's not the leg injury. I mean, it's an extension of the leg.
Right, different level of athleticism between Jonathan Isaac
and Zydrunas. That's true. You didn't see Zydrunas jumping through the ceiling.
Right. Zydrunas was not a guy who was going to rely upon his athleticism to make him effective, whereas Isaac, I think, does, especially on the defensive end of the floor. I don't know. I would be very, very worried about paying somebody who had had season-ending injuries 2 years in a row that kind of money. I understand why. I understand it's sort of the same thing we've been talking about, that he's an asset, and if you just let him walk or you don't extend him, then you lose that asset for nothing. So maybe if he comes back and he's healthy, great. You get production out of it. Maybe he becomes a guy that you can throw in as a trade to try to get something better. But that's a lot of money for a guy who I have no idea whether or not he's ever going to be healthy enough to be on the floor. And if he is on the floor, is he going to be able to do the things that he did previously that made him such a special, tantalizing talent as people were watching him out there on the floor, especially on the defensive end?
All right, Markel?
I mean, I'm partial to Markel Fultz. So for me, that's a yes, simply because I do think that he's a guy who he's never going to live up to the billing of being the number one pick in the draft. He's just not. I mean, I think you're going to have to look at it sort of like we talked about earlier with Wiggins. You're going to have to look at this through the lens of, if this guy was the 15th pick in the draft, would you be happy to have him on your roster? And I think, in all honesty, I think the answer is yes. I mean, he made a lot of strides last year. He's never going to be a great shooter, I don't think, but he is a guy who can pass. He is a guy who's athletic. He is a guy who's long. He can play defense. It seems like he's a guy who has a good attitude. Seems like he's a guy who's well-liked by his teammates. And so, to me, it seems like it's minimal risk for me to be able to put that, to have Markel Fultz out there on that contract. And I don't know. I'm rooting for the guy. I'm rooting for him, because when you get that stuff that goes on in your mind and trying to overcome that, and if he's able to overcome it and have a quality NBA career after, again, you just think back to what those videos of him shooting the ball or trying to shoot the ball looked like. And you could say whether it was physical or whether it was all mental or whether it was some combination of the two. I mean, that was a complete and utter disaster. It went from a guy who was clearly the consensus number one draft pick all throughout that college season and all throughout the pre-draft process. And then suddenly he just fell off the map. And so I'm rooting for him, and I'm happy he got the contract extension, and I hope it works out for him. And so I would say yes. Let's put it this way. If he was a player on the Cavs and they extended him at this particular rate, I would have said yay for sure.
Okay. Two more quick ones, Mike.
Sure.
OG Anunoby. I don't know how to say his last name. Anunoby. You know who I'm talking about. Toronto Raptors. 4 years, $72
million. Anunoby.
Thank you. Listen, I did not... This is not a pronunciation lesson from me. I'm just telling you that much. It's also 1:40 a.m. Years, $72 million. Player option last season. He's better than, in my opinion, he's better than Kennard, because I know him. But he's also been on a good team. So I think it's a good move. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he's worth 4 years, $72 million. The league's penciling out funny money, because Derek White also got a four-year, $73 million contract extension from the Spurs. And yes, I will say this, Mike. If you put Derek White in the lineup, I probably couldn't pick him out. I know who he is, like I by like name, but I don't necessarily know him by face. I don't know if you agree with that statement.
I could pick Derek White out.
Okay. I guess San Antonio's, I don't think, you know, when I go back and think about last season, I don't feel like I watched any San Antonio basketball.
Can you pick out Lonnie Walker?
Oh yeah, he had the cornrows, right?
He has the big
He's got some poofy hair thing going on.
Like the chimney. He has like the
But last year, didn't he have like cornrows or something? I feel like
he's always had that big giant, I know who you're talking about.
I feel like he had cornrows at some point, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Derek White's got, I don't know. I would recognize Derek White, I guess, my point. So both of those signings, like Anunoby, I like that signing. I think the thing with Anunoby is that he's a two-way player. He can play offense, and he's a really, really good defensive player that can switch across multiple positions. So when you start thinking about a guy that can provide value on both sides of the ball, to me, that one makes a lot of sense. Again, when you just look at the raw number and you say, man, is OG Anunoby worth $72 million over 4 years? It's hard to stomach that that's true, but I think it is true. And because he can play both offense and defense, to me, that makes a lot of sense. Derek White, I'm not quite as sold on him just because I look at what the Spurs are doing. As you said, I haven't watched a ton of Spurs basketball, but I know that with DeJounte Murray and Lonnie Walker and Derek White, that's kind of their three-headed guard monster trying to figure out which of those guys are going to be the guys they want to build around. And maybe based on this contract extension, it looks like Derek White is one of them. And I know I think they extended Murray, if I'm not mistaken, last year. So they have those two guys locked up under contracts that probably, if you look across the spectrum of the league, are probably fair contracts that both if you keep those guys and they're productive, you're happy with that. And they're probably also in that range of contracts that can be packaged and tradable if it comes to that. So I'm good. I guess I'm good with Anunoby and with Derek White signing at the number that they did.
All right. Well, that wraps up the contract extensions that I had to talk about. Are there any that I missed that you can think of off the top of your head, Mike?
No, I think those are the ones we talked about some of the other ones that happened earlier in the year and guys that got max extensions. And, you know, you had Donovan Mitchell and Tatum and Brandon Ingram, and all those guys were locked up by their current teams, which is kind of what we expect with guys coming off their rookie contract. That next contract extension always seems like they stay with the team because they can maximize their money and then get to that third contract. And that's when guys tend to jump teams. So it was a fun opening night, even though both games were not as competitive, I think, as we would have hoped. There was still lots of intrigue and things to watch in these two games. And then obviously tomorrow night, we have a full slate of games coming up. So we'll see what happens tomorrow night. And we may jump back
on.
Well,
Mike, we still have one more topic to talk about. Don't jump ship yet.
Do you know where to hit the backboard for the highest percentage shots? Do you know when using the backboard is better than taking a direct shot? Be certain that you are taking the highest percentage shots by training with the Shoticle. The Shoticle mounts on your backboard to give you the location of the highest percentage shots. Train with the Shoticle and you will score more. Basketball is a data-driven game, so don't ignore the data and the facts. We worry about the data so you can focus on shooting. Visit Shoticle.com now and start scoring more. NBA. I was just saying we might come back on and talk about tomorrow's games too.
The only other thing is there was a Silver was asked about NBA expansion, and he said they are seriously considering and looking into NBA expansion. I would think that they would only do expansion once this whole pandemic thing's over. Like, they're not going to sit here and try to do an expansion. They're going to I would guess this is a few years away. Would you agree with that statement, Mike?
I don't know. Did you hear Mark Cuban on Simmons' podcast? Did you listen to that interview?
I listened to the first part of it, but I didn't finish it, if I'm completely honest with you. I don't remember.
So Cuban made some interesting points. He talked a little bit about whether or not – because Simmons was asking him, well, couldn't you expand and then that would make up for the money that the owners have lost during the pandemic of, you know, you bring in the whatever it is, $3 billion for each of those franchises and then split it up 30 ways, and wouldn't that make up for the amount of money that each of the teams has lost during the course of the pandemic? And Cuban's point was – well, sort of, but he's like, we could go, you know, we're going to have to, basically you're getting that money. He's like, we could go out and get a loan and probably get a better return on our money, or the money would be less costly than it would be to bring in these other two teams, because then you're splitting the TV revenue and all the league revenue up. You know, you're slicing that pie instead of slicing it into 30 pieces, you're slicing it into 32 pieces. And Cuban's point was, is that there's cheaper money out there, that if owners need the money, rather than bringing in these new franchises that they're going to have to pay in perpetuity and split the revenue, that they could just go to a bank and get a loan for the money that they might need to make up for.
I think it's happening. I think it's happening.
I think it's going to happen. And he obviously said that there's other factors that are involved, and it clearly depends upon what the price is that you're going to get for each one of those franchises.
Well, you'd have to imagine if they expand to 32, okay, that they get more national TV, they'd be able to get more national TV games in somehow. Let's just say they add the two teams. That's 164 more games if they go back to an 82 game schedule, right? I mean, so some of those games are going to get broadcast on
national TV. So then you're still getting more revenue on that end.
Right. The overall pie of revenue could continue to grow as a result of adding those two teams. But again, Cuban's point was just you're dividing it 32 ways instead of dividing it 30 ways. And that's happening in perpetuity. That's not just something that happens for 5 years.
Yeah, but it's forever and ever.
That happens forever. So his point about that was just, you know, it'd be a short-term gain, but in the long term, it might not end up being the most financially sound decision for each of the individual owners. That being said, he also said there's clearly a lot of benefit to the NBA being back in Seattle and wherever else that other franchise would be, which you'd have to guess that Vegas would be the other franchise.
Yeah, so here's a question, Mike. If Seattle and Vegas, they're obviously going to be in the Western Conference. So we're going to have to – they're going to have to redistribute. They're going to have to take a team and move it, right? Or they're going to have to take one team from the West and move it to the East. What team would you move? I would move New Orleans.
So if you're moving, I think your candidates – I mean, I think your candidates to move to the East, there's you could...
New Orleans, Oklahoma City, Minnesota.
Minnesota and Memphis. Right?
Okay, I want New Orleans because that means that the Cavs play the Zion more than two times a year.
If you get Memphis, you get Ja.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the teams. No, none of those other teams could you justify... possibly being
Minnesota's probably being too far out there too, right?
I'd say Minnesota could theoretically be. You think about Minnesota being Chicago, being in the East. You know, it's kind of there. Minnesota, I think, still would be considered kind of a Midwestern.
Here's what I propose. I propose we bring Memphis and New Orleans, and we send Milwaukee to the West.
There you go. There you go. Not that it really matters. Cavs got to go a long way before they can.
Yeah, before
they can even worry about what teams are in what conference. We got a long way to go. So yeah, it'll be fun. I'd love to see Seattle back. When I was a kid, I really liked the Sonics. I don't know what it was about the Sonics. I think maybe because they were the same color as the Strongsville Mustangs. Maybe our collective high school. And I just like their uniforms.
Deadlift Trump.
Going back a long ways, I really liked downtown Freddie Brown. So that was in the late 70s when I was 8, 9, 10 years old. So I always liked the Sonics. So I would love to see the Sonics come back. Okay. And clearly it's an NBA market. And then Vegas, it seems like it's inevitable that all the leagues are going to be in Vegas. I mean, I would guess that.
I don't think baseball is going to go to Vegas.
You don't think so?
No,
I guess
why.
It could be too hot.
It would be too hot. Unless they build a dome, I guess.
Yeah, you'd have to build a dome, which I'm not sure anybody really wants to play baseball in a dome at this point. So
yeah,
baseball is going to have to build like 7,000 seat stadiums anyway for all the fans that are going to be coming to baseball games. But that's a whole other story anyway.
Yep, I agree. All right, I don't have anything else to say.
Okay, so wrapping up. Couple announcements on the Hoopheads Pod Network front. This week we debuted a couple more new shows. So we had Spanning the Spurs put out episode 1 with Corbin Ford. We also had the LA Hoops Pod with Roman Veitsman and Jeff Chisiver. And today we dropped Thunderous Applause with Josiah Morton. So it was a big week of debuts. So we have a ton of NBA content. We're now up to 10 NBA team-specific pods, and then we have X's and O's NBA Breakdown that talks about things all across the league, and they're also diving into strategy. They're diving into player development. If you haven't gotten a chance to listen to that podcast, make sure you do that. A lot of great stuff going on the network. We're excited about it. We're growing every day, and we're going to continue to add shows until we got all the markets covered. So please go out there if you're a fan of one of the teams that we have a podcast for. Go out and listen. We are excited about what we have going on in the network. Please check out all the great shows we have. And I think that wraps it up, Jay.
Yep. Sounds good to me, man. Sounds really good.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. Thanks to everybody for listening tonight. We appreciate it. We may see you back here tomorrow night. But in the meantime, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. If you have an existing podcast or are looking to launch your own pod but aren't sure where to start, the team at My Podcast Manager can help. Our podcast team works behind the scenes so you can do what you do best. We'll help you launch your podcast, make it sound great, and free up your time for the more enjoyable parts of podcasting. If you're ready to put your podcast editing, production, and promotion on autopilot with a trusted team of podcasting professionals, visit mypodcastmanager.com to get started.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.